yes to how your finest hour. Radio.
What is this song?
All we hear is Radio Gaga, Radio Guru.
Oh,
Radio
yeah.
Gaga.
That's
all
my doing.
We hear is Radio Gaga.
Hello, this is Rish Outfield. This is the Rish Outcast. Please forgive me. So, we're going to present a story today. I'm going to give you a little spoiler before I start. There may be a schoolroom full of children at the end of the story reciting something their teacher has instructed. And for that, I also apologize. Funny, you know, I named my would-be production company No Apologies Productions back in college because I kept apologizing for things that were outside of my control. I apologized for things that, you know, weren't bad. So, you know, little errors that I made or whatever, and I just couldn't stop apologizing. So I called myself that as a reminder to myself. You stop apologizing. You don't need to apologize for who you are or for things that are outside of your control. And we kind of live in an era where people lose sight of that a lot of times. But you know what? Let's not go into that. Basically, I've apologized twice, and now this is kind of me apologizing for apologizing. I'm going to present to you a short story called Radio Gaga. And so maybe I do need to apologize. The thing is, Radio Gaga was a placeholder title because I wrote this for a contest and the deadline was rapidly approaching and I just couldn't come up with a title that I liked that was like radio related. Like Elvis Costello had a song called Radio Radio, and REM had a song called Radio Song. You know, Video Killed, the radio star. Don't play that song on the radio. I bet they won't play this song on the radio. I bet they won't play this song. There are many song titles that I could have chosen, but I sent in the story under the deadline, and Radio Gaga was the title that I chose. And when it came time to look at the story again, to revise it, to see if maybe there's something good in there, I had sort of gotten used to that title. And so I kept it. And now I'm going to share it with you. We'll talk more on the other side. Is that fair? Yeah, I just got straight to the point on this one, which is not my routine, is it? Well, let's try it anyway.
Radio Gaga. Bunyan McKendricks saw the clock radio at the yard sale and approached it. It was sitting on a bookshelf, almost overflowing with water-damaged college textbooks, and she picked it up. She had been late for class 3 times the last week, and late for work once, having depended on her phone to wake her, but simply reaching over and shutting it off before coming fully awake. Whoops. But this, an old clock radio, she could plug in across the bedroom, turn it up as loud as she needed it to be, and wake up to the songs of Katy Perry or Rihanna, having to physically rise and cross to the nightstand to turn it off. She briefly glanced at the other items for sale. There was a little jewelry box she thought her mother would like, but Bunyan left it where it was, since she hadn't seen her mother since going away for college. The clock radio was all she needed. "How much?" she asked the Asian girl with the dyed purple hair that was taking the yard sale money.
"Oh, that's not mine. Vanessa!"
A plump white girl, also with purple dyed hair, looked up.
"Not mine either. Must be Cynthia's."
$5, then?" asked the cashier.
I'd say $3.
So Bunyan paid $3 to have a clock radio and put it in her backpack as she walked to the coffee shop, forgetting all about it until she ended up late for work a second time that week. That night, she set the radio on the table opposite her bed and turned it to Q98.7, which played the hits of the 2000s all the way to today. She tested the volume, turning it down from its highest setting, but leaving it pretty darn loud. Camille at work had given her the stink eye the first time she was late, and the second time had threatened to put a written warning in her file if she kept it up. Bunyan set the clock to wake her the next morning at 7:30 and rid it from her mind. Until, at 7:30, a male voice shook her out of her pleasant dream about touring Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, but with a handsome Johnny Depp playing the guide, rather than the creepy one from the movie, speaking at the foot of her bed.
But the woman didn't know what kind of danger she was in. After all, it was a brightly lit parking garage, and hers were the only footfalls that could be heard.
Bunyan made an interrogative sound, though not quite a word. The voice continued, from the radio across the room.
But she still felt that she was not alone, and not safe as she approached her Toyota and fumbled with her car keys.
It was a commercial, or the news or something, and it was disconcerting to hear. But the radio had done its job, and Bunyan got up and out of bed. Still, the voice continued.
She cocked her head to listen, and yes, there were footfalls coming from somewhere nearby. And then they too stopped. That disturbed her more than the initial sound had done. Why would the footsteps stop if the person walking weren't trying not to be heard?
She switched off the clock radio and got dressed for school. That night, Bunyan set the alarm again and fell asleep reading her Revolutionary War textbook.
Who's there? The woman called out, though she immediately regretted it. She recognized fear in her tone, even though her car was just in front of her and no one else was around. But was that really the case?
Bunyan sat up, wrinkling her nose. It was that same male voice, speaking from the clock radio. And it wasn't a commercial, but some kind of... what did you call it? A radio show.
The woman saw a form then, a man-shaped shadow, standing in the empty stalls where the maintenance vehicles were supposed to park. The overhead lights there were out for some reason, but there was definitely a person there. The woman was afraid to turn away from him, but she finally had to see how close to her car she was.
It was 7:30 again. Bunyan McKendricks got out of bed, gathered her books up from where they had fallen on the floor, and hit the snooze button on the radio. She left the room and had her morning shower. When she came back in, it was as if she hadn't missed anything.
The second her back was turned, she heard the footsteps again. She spun. The man was running toward her. He held something metallic in his hand, a knife or a coat hanger, it looked like.
She dressed and got ready, only half listening to the reading. The old radio had a manual dial, and she had probably missed 98.7 FM. She was listening to NPR or one of those awful stations that never even played music, and this was a Halloween show or something, just several months early. But something about it chilled Bunyan, and she didn't relish the idea of hearing this story get to the end.
The woman was so close to her car. She could, she figured, get the door open, get inside, close the door, and lock it before the man reached her. But she surprised herself by running instead. She ran in the direction of the elevator, the opposite direction the man was coming from. She could hear her pursuer's footsteps getting closer behind her, and something else. He was giggling softly.
Bunyan flipped the off switch this time. Her roommate Devin greeted her from the kitchen, eating breakfast in her bra and pajama bottoms again.
Hey, you okay?
she asked when she didn't get a hello back.
Just tired, Bunyan said. Well, that's better than oversleeping and missing class again, right?
Devon said, smiling. But she shouldn't have bothered. Bunyan was in another one of her moods, and it was best to leave her alone until it passed. Bunyan couldn't stop thinking of the voice on the radio, the way he seemed to be telling a story rather than reporting on something, and of course, the unsettling nature of the story he was telling. She changed the channel the alarm clock was set to, all the way down the dial to 93.1 FM, the Campus Tunes station. But it woke her again the next day.
The woman reached the elevator and pressed the call button. The lights on the bank said 7. Could have been worse, could have said R, but that was small comfort. She wrenched open the door to the stairwell and started up the steps, her own footfalls very loud echoing against the walls. Up, up, up she went, stumbling once on one of the stairs, but she kept going. Below her, she heard the unmistakable sound of a door opening, then those awful footsteps, also going up.
It was the stupid radio play or whatever, being read by that same man. And it upset her because the flashing display still said it was set to 93.1. She turned it off. She had to go to work that afternoon, but instead of setting the clock radio, she depended on her phone again. This time, she put it on her dresser, so she'd have to come fully awake and turn it off. No chance of sleeping through that. But she didn't have to. Right before her phone would have started its ringtone, the clock radio began to broadcast.
The door to floor 1 was locked, with Bordeaux Industries personnel only marked on it. So she kept going to the 2nd floor. The man below was still coming, but she opened the door and went inside before he got there. Floor 2 was nothing but conference rooms, including the big meeting space where they'd had their office Christmas party. Hello? She called, and no one answered. The holiday weekend had meant a lot of employees had gone home early, but still, to find no one at all, not even a janitor.
Confused and a little angry, Bunyan got up and switched off the clock radio. She looked at her phone. The alarm was still set, and would be going off in 1 minute. She frowned at it, but went to the bathroom to start her workday. When she came back into her room, her cell phone was playing its wake-up call tune, and she shut that off, too. At that moment, the clock radio blared to life again behind her.
Some of the meeting rooms had windows, but some were just dark. One of these she opened and ducked inside. The door had no lock by design, since anyone could use them for meetings or interviews or just 10 minutes of peace and quiet. She considered pushing a chair or the metal table against the door, but then he might hear, and he would know she was in this room. She heard a door open across the hall and nearly checked to see if it was a normal co-worker, but whoever it was silent. No chatting, no whistling or humming, just ominously quiet. Just in case...
Bunyan had struggled initially with plugging the radio in, since the outlet was behind the chest of drawers there. But she had no problem yanking the plug out of the wall, feeling a bit of satisfaction as the creepy storyteller's voice cut out abruptly. She looked at the clock radio, that malfunctioning, detested thing, and considered tossing it out her bedroom window. But her apartment, indeed all campus-approved housing, didn't have windows that opened all the way, so she couldn't even have that small satisfaction. She dumped it in the wastebasket and gave it the finger, but that did little to calm her down. She stuck her head out into the hall.
Devon?
Her roommate didn't answer. Her bedroom and bathroom were empty, a note on the counter with the cryptic word "donuts" written on it. A note for Bunyan to get donuts after work? A note that Devon was out getting donuts, that they should go grab donuts sometime? Was donuts a substitute swear word like her mother used to have? She was by herself in the apartment, and she wasn't comfortable with that. Just a few months before, when there were five of them living there, getting a little peace and quiet, or the bathroom to herself without someone knocking on the door, wanting to know when they could use it, would have been a dream. But one roommate had gone on to a four-year college, one had dropped out of school altogether, and poor Maya had fled to what was undoubtedly a loveless marriage, leaving her and Devon alone. And now, Devon was off somewhere, leaving only Bunyan. "Donuts," she whispered, like it was a curse. She didn't like it there, with no one around. It put unpleasant thoughts into her head, and Bunyan didn't need any more of those. She went into the kitchen and looked through the cabinets to see if Veronica had left any of her little pilfered wine bottles. Of course she hadn't. Back in Bunyan's room, a male voice began to speak.
"The woman hid under the table, but it didn't matter."
Bunyan's first instinct was to run out the door, leave the apartment, call Devon and come back when she was home. She glanced down the hall. The radio announcer was continuing the story, as he always did, from exactly where he had left off, as he always did.
"The door opened anyway, and the lights came on."
And it occurred to Bunyan that it wasn't the apartment building that was bad. It was that radio. It had all started when she'd brought it in here. She could run, sure, but a better solution would be to get rid of it.
Under the table, she could see a pair of dirty work boots and filthy khakis. A big wet spot was on the crotch of the pants.
Bunyan hesitated before grabbing the radio, afraid that she might get an electrical shock from it if she touched it. But how could she? It wasn't plugged in anymore.
And the giggling came again. As the boot stepped closer, she was sure what the man held in his hand. An old-fashioned straight razor.
She picked it up out of the garbage can and flipped the off switch again. The awful story came to a halt. But she knew it was only temporary. There was the trash chute in the hallway right by the stairwell, but it had been out of order since that St. Patrick's Day incident. But the stairs to the roof were right next to it, and Bunyan made use of them. A cool breeze was blowing on the top of her building, and birds were singing in the trees below. Beneath that was the lawn and parking lot. Bunyan stepped up on the ridge that went all the way around the edge of the roof and scowled at the radio one last time. "What a waste of $3, she muttered. Not the greatest thing to say, but pretty good, considering how scared she was. Bunyan had played softball as a little girl and relished the idea of lobbing the radio far in the air across an imaginary home plate where a line drive would take it sailing toward the hard ground below. She pulled back her arm, and the radio blared to life again.
He dragged her, screaming, out from under the...
The sound so startled Bunyan that she lost her footing, one foot hitting the ledge, the other foot hitting nothing at all. And down she went. Not quite a home run, but still a very solid impact down below. The clock radio shattered on the pavement where the lawn ended and the handicapped parking spots began, finally stilling the radio voice forever. But Bunyan McKendricks wasn't able to appreciate it. Or anything else. Detective Rushton was a portly man with a kind face. He wore a brown turtleneck and blue suit jacket, like he'd lost a bet recently, but he had picked them out himself. He had been patient and understanding with Devon Mercari, but he kept glancing around as though he had missed something.
"To go out for some donuts. I thought she had gone to work, but they called here looking for her. I checked, and her car was still here. Before I got back inside, I heard the ambulance."
Rushton nodded.
"Your roommate. She was upset."
The girl had red around her eyes from overworking the tear ducts, but she wasn't crying now.
"Always," but that was just who she was. I never thought it was a cry for help.
He nodded. You said she left a note.
No, it wasn't a note exactly. It was...
She had it on the kitchen table and handed it over. Rushton scanned the first sentence.
The woman had left the office a full 2 hours after she'd planned to, but was eager to get to her car and get home to get her weekend started.
Neat, meticulous handwriting. Very legible. Covering both sides.
Something for a class?
Not even,
Devon said. He turned the sheet over and read the last lines.
Now she could see what he held in his hand, an old-fashioned straight razor. She got an even closer look when he dragged her out from under the conference room table.
Rushton looked at the girl.
It's a story, he asked. About a woman being chased? Or what, exactly?
The girl made a sound in between a sigh and a chuckle.
It's how her mother died. Some crazy man mugged her, cut her throat or something, when Bunyan was just a little girl.
She told you the story?
All the time. She told it to everybody, any chance she got. Guess she was writing about it, too. I didn't realize.
She closed her mouth before the tears would begin again.
There was probably nothing you could have done, miss.
The detective waited for a few more details, but the girl wasn't saying more.
I'll need to take this,
Rushton said, indicating the writings.
And there was an item she jumped with, an alarm clock?
An old clock radio she kept using. Bunyan complained about it, too. About it playing the wrong station or only getting AM or something. As far as I know, it never even worked. She'd turn it on, but it only ever played static.
Rushton nodded. There was a metaphor in there somewhere. For life, maybe. But he wasn't sure what it was. He thanked the girl and left the apartment, a bit gloomier than he had been before. The end.
Well, and we're back. Should we have the kids say it? I'm too predictable. We'll not have the kids say it, but this was not a great story with a terrible title. I've mentioned before that I love to take song titles and name a story after them. I've always felt that there was something poetic about that or something... I guess I'll go as far as to say something clever about that, even though there probably isn't. I remember, I want to say that it was in like elementary school, I heard that you couldn't trademark a title. Titles are not copyrighted. So anybody can make a movie called Halloween. And that's always just sort of stuck in the back of my head, and I've always assumed that song titles are that same way. Because how many songs do you know that are called Magic or I Love You or I Miss You or Let's Rock or anyway, God, why am I still talking? Radio Gaga is the name of a Queen song, and I want to say that it's from 78 or so, and I never liked it as a kid because of that title. You know, all we hear is Radio Gaga, Radio Goo Goo, Radio Gaga. But I hear the song now and I'm fine with it. I should hate the song even more because that's where Lady Gaga got her name. And yet, I find it kind of charming. Now, the backstory for that song is that the drummer of Queen was driving, I want to say in Los Angeles, with his kid, his son, who was very, very little, and a song came on the radio. And I want to say that this was in the disco era. But if it wasn't, it was the Piña Colada song. And he's told the story many times. Whatever it was a terrible song. And his son said, "Change the station, Daddy, it's Radio Kaka." And he agreed with his son and thought that that was funny, and it stayed with him for a long time. And he started to write a song called Radio Kaka, which is the slang term for poopy. You know, it's a kiddie curse word in Spanish, meaning, you know, crap. It's not supremely vulgar, but every word is vulgar somewhere. Wankel rotary engine. So he started writing this song, Radio Kaka, and then at some point it became Radio Gaga, like baby talk, like the dumbing down of music for the lowest common denominator. And it was a hit song for Queen, and a good one. And you've gotten your history lesson for the day. The more you know. The story, Radio Gaga, has a much more mundane, much more prosaic explanation to it. And that is that this was another one of those stories where I wrote to a prompt. And the prompt was,
as you reach for the dial, a voice on the radio reacts in protest.
Was that an English accent? That sounded like, it sounded like Ralph Fiennes in Quiz Show. Has anybody ever spoken with that accent in any part of the world? So yes, that was the prompt. And I've shared a handful of contest stories on here. In fact, I think I decided that I would have a subtitle to every one of these contest loser stories. And it, just like the title of this short story, it was, I had a hell of a time trying to come up with a name that was clever and catchy. I was trying to come up with some kind of play on no contest, on the runner-up, the loser of the contest. Finally, I came up with out of competition, and I changed out to pout of competition. And it didn't work, but sorry. Dang, there's another one. I cannot stop. So I've entered several of these where I'm given a prompt and a bunch of people are supposed to write stories based on the prompt. For, I think this one is the Paradise Lost Writers Group. I've explained before how I really like writing to prompts. I like writing stories for contests because they make you think outside the box. They make you come up with something that you hadn't had in the back of your head, you hadn't been working on for a long time. Or they give you an excuse to write something that you have played with over the years or months, and your results may vary. Definitely, there have been some stinkers that I've written for these contests. But the question needs to be asked, is a bad story better than no story at all? I mean, maybe that's for you to answer, but I think, yeah, I think that it is. I don't know. I mean, like say that you were an actor and you got cast in a movie and it was a spectacularly bad movie. You still got paid. You still had your work out there, right? Or is it not better? Okay, this couldn't be an outtake if you'd like, or I can just leave it in. The last Comic Con that I went to, a local one, there was a panel on bad acting in movies. There's a big group of people, and I wish that I were part of that group. They always do clip panels at the local con. One of them was like worst movie deaths. And by worst, not like most awfully painful, but like poorly executed. They were weirdest fight scenes they did one time. I would really enjoy like a horror one where they're looking at the least scary monsters or killers. That would be very fun. But this one was really the worst acting in movies, and they had a picture of Tommy Wiseau from The Room, you know, as the image for that panel, but The funny thing was they had a rule that none of them could use the room or show any clips from the room. And so it was stuff much more obscure than that. But then they showed a, it's got to be the most famous clip from Troll 2. And Troll 2 is infamous. A lot of people say that, you know, it's the worst movie of all time. And it's not. Because Troll 2 is entertaining. I've talked about it before on this podcast. There's a documentary called The Best Worst Movie. And it's a retrospective about Troll 2 with the cast that worked on it. And anyhow, the scene that they showed was where the teenage boy is paralyzed. And he says, "They're eating her. And then they're going to eat me. Oh my God!" And the camera zooms into his mouth. You know, that scene is delightful. It's so, so bad that it's good. They showed that clip and we all applauded. And then some guy in the crowd said, "Come on, that wasn't that bad." He stood up and shouted it so that everybody would notice. And it was that actor that had been that teenager 30-something years ago, 33 years ago, in Troll 2. And he had come to the panel, and they had him up on the panel as a special guest, and he talked about that scene, and he talked about his career as an actor, and he's still a working actor all these years later. But when I say working actor, the specter of Troll 2 has followed him around like a millstone around his neck. And he says, "Sometimes I will audition for a part and people will look me up and they'll be like, 'Oh, yes, it says on Wikipedia that you're the worst actor ever.'" He says it's no fun to hear that. But at the same time, every single person in that audience that clapped for him, it was because of Troll 2. And my niece was there and she wanted to get a selfie with this guy. But the line for selfies was astounding. It was like 15 people long. And the line for autographs from this guy. And they hadn't advertised that this guy was going to be there. So it's not like people brought their Troll 2s. But they could have. I really felt for this guy because he talked a little bit more about his career and about trying to get out from the shadow of that bad performance. And he even said that take, the "they're eating her, and then they're going to eat me," was take number 10. And I found that so hard to believe that a movie like that would have 10 takes on anything. I worked on a movie that David Fincher directed, and it was automatic overtime. I didn't realize it at the time, but everybody in the crew was just like, "Oh yeah, it's David Fincher. We're all going to do 16 hours today." He would just do the take over and over and over again, and there was no discernible difference between takes that I could tell. Somebody like that, okay, I can see, yeah, that was take number 10, but wow. Anyhow, I was likening it to writing a bad story is better than not writing a story at all. And the thing is, you could argue with that and use examples, but the only examples that are going to come to mind are things that are popular, things that everybody knows. If you say, "Oh, well, my brother-in-law, he wrote a novel and sold 3 copies of it, and yeah, the publisher ended up going under. Even I didn't read it, and he's my brother-in-law." Well, that's kind of a cute story, but it's not universal. Nobody else is going to say, "Oh yeah, it would have been better had he not written that novel," because they haven't read it. Now that you've heard Radio Gaga, I guess the question, rhetorical or no, can be asked, is it better to write a, should I say a bad story? Or should I just say a mediocre story? I don't know. I got this story out to do the episode about, And I looked it over. I made a few changes. I ended up adding like 200, 250 words to it. There were a couple of typos. I changed the first line of the story. I think it's fair to say that this was a fairly exhaustive rewrite from the original. But there's that old saying, you can only polish a turd so much. And am I calling Radio Gaga a turd? Look, if it was as terrible as that, I don't think I would dare share it with you. Because this is a show for my fans, or for my friends, or for my friends. And if you share something really crappy, isn't there the fear that it will lose you fans? Let's see, I'm gonna name three things that I like about this story, and then we'll move on, okay? So number one, I like that the girl's name is Bunyan. And it's B-U-N-Y-O-N. Like Paul Bunyan. And like Radio Gaga. Oh, you know what? Let's ask our good deceased friend, Freddie Mercury, if he will say, hey, every time I say that title. But like that title, this name Bunyan was a placeholder. I was going to have a girl be the main character, and I named her Bunyan like the growth on your foot. And in the end, right before I sent in the story, I was just like, oh my gosh, Bunyan. So I just did search and replace B-U-N-I-O-N, I think that's how you spell it, with B-U-N-Y-O-N. And it became like Paul Bunyan. And one of the comments that I got on the story was, yeah, I've never known anybody with that name. It was a little awkward, but oh well. I think it's funny that her name is Bunyan because it's so stupid, and I left it in there. Okay, I have to come up with three things. Well, two, I've got my police officer, Officer Rushton, or is he Detective Rushton by this point, show up at the end of the story, and it's always cool when I can have him show up. He's been in probably 8 or 9 stories now, and a couple that never got finished. At this point in story chronology, he's lost his partner, Officer Orton, and I think I killed off Orton in an episode that I ran on the Rish Outcast. It was in a ladies' room. And yet, there will probably be more stories with Rushton and Orton one day. I liked having the same cops. Anytime cops have to be called in a story, anytime a policeman comes to somebody's aid or investigates the ending of a story, I just thought it would be fun if it was always the same cops. Maybe that's not fun. But it was, and I've told this story on the air as well, but, you know, it's worth repeating because it's so fun. You know, my very, very first screenplay that I ever wrote, which was in that screenwriting class in college, I had the main characters go on a date, and they went out for pizza. And as a nod to my friend Ian, who was the first friend I had made in college, I called the pizza place Fat Ian's Pizza. And it hurt his feelings. He was upset by that. And I didn't get that because Ian's not fat. He never was fat. It was just supposed to make him smile. And he was upset enough by it that instead of saying, well, I'll change it then, I was like, oh, okay. Anytime there's a pizza place in any of my writing from now on, it's going to be Fat Ian's Pizza. Now that makes me a prick, but I don't care. No apologies, Productions, dude. So there you go. I got to have Rushton come back again. And I'll probably kill him off one day, like I did Orton. You know, if I need a policeman to meet his end in a story, why not, right? So now I need to come up with a third thing. I guess the third thing that I liked was that it was all in Bunyan's head. Certainly that's been done before, and it's been done a lot. But I just like the idea that she had a mental break, and it could have been anything, but she chose for it to be, you know, subconsciously chose for it to be this radio thing. And maybe that's not great. Maybe it doesn't hold up. I had a couple of comments of, I found it strange that she didn't remark on how odd it was that the story would just continue where it left off. Or then she didn't freak out more about that, because it's definitely something supernatural happening. And then they get to the end of the story and they're like, oh, okay, well, never mind then. I guess that makes sense. I wanted to put something in, some kind of hint, some kind of reference to her mother at the very beginning. Like when she was at the yard sale where she got the radio, I wanted to have there, and I still do. Maybe I will slip something like that in before this goes out, where she buys something and is like, yeah, my mom would like this. The thing is, you can only polish a turd so much. And I know that's not the saying, but I'm making it the saying. Would this story be better if I sat down with it again 6 months from now and did another draft? The answer is yes. And would this story be even better if a year after that I did another draft? And I think the answer is yes, but we're talking about very small percentages. Like the difference between the first draft and the second draft, I'd say that there's like a 13% increase in quality. And then a third draft would be like a 9% increase in quality. And a fourth draft would be like a 6% or 3%. There's a law of diminishing returns with rewrites, I believe. And I don't know. You may be different, but you're always going to find things that you can improve. There's always going to be lines where you go, oh, yeah, that line didn't quite work. Let me change it to this. And then the next time you're like, oh, that doesn't work quite as well either. Let me change it to this. But eventually, you just need to stop and move on to the next project. And Dean Wesley Smith would say, yeah, after the first draft, you need to stop and move on to the next project. And maybe he's right. I don't know. I'm reminded, did you see the movie? It's a Martin Scorsese movie called Shutter Island. And it's got Leonardo DiCaprio in it, Mark Ruffalo, Ben Kingsley, Michelle Williams, Max von Sydow, other people. What's his name? Was she a great big fat person? And it's a movie, and all of it takes place on this island off of Boston that has been turned into a mental institution. You know, it's like a research center for the mentally ill. It's a prison for crazy people. And Leonardo DiCaprio is investigating, he's a cop, right? A detective, and he's investigating the escape of a patient. And it becomes clear from the very, very beginning that things aren't quite right, that there's maybe a conspiracy going on. And there's a twist at the end of Shutter Island. It was based on a Dennis Lehane book, and I saw the movie and I quite liked it, and so I read the book. And then, like a year or two later, I saw the movie again. I just sat down and I watched it. But I knew that the movie wouldn't be as good the second time, because I knew what it was building toward. But to my shock, the movie was better the second time, knowing what is going on. Because there are so many hints and clues. Like, the crazy people will say things, and you as an audience member dismiss what they say because they're crazy. And Leonardo DiCaprio has been drugged, and so he keeps seeing things, and it's hard for him to know what is real and what's not real. And the things that he is seeing, it all makes sense by the end of the movie. But having read the book, knowing where it was going, it made sense from the very beginning, and I felt like it was super brilliant. And I think that Radio Gaga, I could sprinkle all sorts of hints throughout in that way and have it work. But it's not really necessary. It's just a little piece, a little story, and I'm glad that I wrote it, because here we have another episode. And if you didn't like the story, then yeah, don't be glad that I wrote it. But I felt like it was worth sharing. If only to tell you the Queen Radio Kaka story, right? You gotta admit, that alone is worth sharing.
So stick around, 'cause we might miss you when we grow tired of all this beast.
I have been Rish Outfield, and this has been the Rish Outcast, podcasting Gaga. Hasn't it? Maybe I wasn't even recording. That would be rich.
Yeah! All we hear is Radio Gaga, Radio Guru.
The music in this episode was created by Kevin MacLeod, whose shenanigans can be found over at incompetech.com. The Rish Outcast has been released under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. That allows you to listen to it, copy it, and share it, but not to sell it, edit it, distort it, or otherwise have your way with it. I know how you are.
There was the trash chute in the hallway right by the stairwell, but it had been out of order since that. But it had been out of order since that St. Patrick's Day incident. But it had been out of order since that. Since that St. Patrick's Day incident.
As you reach for the dial, a voice on the radio reacts in protest. Huh. My story doesn't really follow that, does it? I mean, not exactly. It's more the spirit of the prompt rather than the letter of the prompt. No wonder I lost the contest. I've got my notebook in front of me. This is the five ideas I had based on that prompt. I'm just going to share them with you in case that's interesting. One, the radio is alive. It's bummed out that nobody listens to the radio anymore. It's lonely. Aww. Two, someone can communicate only through an old radio, picked up and at an estate sale or something. One speaker is blown out, quote-unquote, but it actually transmits from the person on the other side of the veil. Three, a creepy radio show unnerves an unwell girl. She tries to turn it off, but the voice, which will drive her mad, talks her out of it. The radio is unplugged. Four, Arturo's grandmother dies, and he gets her radio. It always plays just what he wants to hear, what he needs to hear. No commercials, ever. But when he grows tired of the radio, instead of picking up his goddamn iPod, the radio changes its tune. Was this really that long ago that I was talking about iPods rather than iPhones? Five. Rihanna? Well, it's not spelled the same way as the singer. Keeps sleeping through her alarm clock. So she gets the radio kind at a yard sale. She sets it, and it wakes her with a creepy radio show. It frightens her, and she goes to turn it off.
The girl was upset by what she heard and wanted to shut off the noise, but it would be a mistake.
She gets more sure it's talking about her.
The fair-haired girl lived alone. Her roommates had fled, one to a squalid uptown apartment, one to a loveless marriage,
just to be away from her.
Most people she knew despised her, and the others simply felt sorry for her.
Later, it describes the girl so closely, it has to be her it is talking about.
Was she insane? She couldn't know. Perhaps the voice was not coming from the radio, but from her head.
Anyhow, those are the five ideas that I jotted down when I decided to enter this contest, pseudo-contest. I find it interesting that the story I wrote is sort of a combination of those. I don't know. That prompt, just like any broken mirror exercise, could inspire a bunch of different stories, not just from a bunch of different people, but from me. And I thought I would share that in case that was interesting to you, to see the paths that diverged and the roads untraveled. Good night.